folks here a lot. She just loved to hear the music and dance. K-13 is her favorite song. If you play it, you might have a chance. Tonight she's only sipping white wine. She's friendly and fun-loving most of the time. But don't ask her on a straight tequila night. She'll start thinking about him, and she's ready to fight. Blames her broken heart on every man inside. On a straight tequila night.
Good afternoon, everybody. How's it going today? This is Tyler Dunn sitting here with Bob McGinn for another Packers podcast. Bob, what did we just listen to right there?
Mr. John Anderson, T.
Mr. John Anderson.
Straight Tequila Night, 1992 for John. I saw him under the stars at the Norbert Hill Center out at Oneida.
Is that right?
June of probably 2005. Pat and I went out there and listened to John with about 300 people. He's quite a country character, and that's quite the song.
So what's the cliff notes on this song? What's it about? Is it about what I got out of that was don't talk to a girl when she's loaded on tequila.
Yeah. When she's sipping white wine, John writes, it's okay, but you know, it gets a little tenuous.
What's
like the Jose Cuervo?
Well, that's a good life lesson out of that song.
I guess
then.
So, huh?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Back in your colleges in Michigan, do you ever talk to a girl on the tequila, I guess?
I don't remember that far back, T.
You don't?
No.
Well, what's funny, though, is like, so that song and that country kind of twang is basically kind of the same premise that you hear in so many rap songs.
Is it? Yeah.
Drunk and hot girls, Kanye West. You know, one and the same. One and the same, Bob. So, all right, well, solid selection.
Good.
We stretched it out there to almost a minute, though. Hopefully people are still listening.
We had to get through the chorus. You know, so now that's on your iPad.
It's on the iPod.
iPod.
It's a pod. Get your technologies in order. So it's on there. They sneak into the routine. So, all right, what are we going to talk about? What do you want to hit on?
Well, we got to get to the New England game. We have other issues to discuss. We had a basketball game last night.
We did. Did you catch any of Syracuse?
None.
Michigan?
Zero.
Zero. What's your interest level in the Wolverines this year?
Tremendous amount once the Super Bowl's done and I'm done working for a while.
Yeah.
I'll be watching almost all their games, taping them. Michigan's a basketball school now, Tyler.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Well, we'll jump right into the first question we got on Twitter from Kyle Cousineau.
Yeah.
Good man here in Green Bay, the unofficial mayor of Green Bay. It's not really Mayor Schmidt, it's Mayor Cousineau. He wants to know, Brady Hoke is out of here. What are your thoughts, and who should they replace Hoke with?
He was like their sixth pick to begin with. Both Harbaughs turned him down. I'm told Pat Fitzgerald from Northwestern turned it down. Les Miles didn't want it. There's another one I'm forgetting. He was number six.
Yeah.
Who would I go after? Jerry Kill of the Golden Gophers. Would he move in conference like that?
I don't know. I don't like to turn that team around, it seems.
Well, he sure did. I like his toughness, yeah.
Yeah. I guess the problem is Michigan, though. I mean, look, Rich Rod is down in Arizona. They might beat Oregon and be in the conversation. I guess it's a program, Bob, right? How the mighty have fallen.
You got that right. You know, it's kind of fun to be humbled.
It is.
It really is. I mean, I've been,
you've been riding high.
A big bowl game every year for, my whole life, and top 10 final AP every year. Finally got one national title with Woodson in 97. Just got greedy. That's the way their fans are over there. We've discussed this, but it's like a church when you go to games at the big house.
Yeah.
There's no intimidation. So they got to get, that's why I'm saying Jerry Kill. He's a basic coach. I don't think they need a big celebrity coach, Jim Harbaugh. The Spartans took that coordinator, Mark D'Antonio, he's just a gruff, tough-nosed guy, and that's the way you got to play in the Midwest. Badgers, with their unbelievable run of success for 25 years, have proven that. Kirk Ferentz won a ton of games in Iowa and the Midwest. Michigan's got to get back to that.
How bad is the Big Ten?
Wow, huh? scouts just kind of laugh at it right now. I had a guy.
Do they really?
Yeah, about a week ago, he was just laughing at the Big Ten.
How so? What do they laugh
just
about?
He was downgrading a couple players just because they're in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Compared, you know, it's like the minor leagues compared to the SEC. And,
wow. That being said, I mean, it'll be an interesting one in Indianapolis this weekend. Melvin Gordon against Ohio State. I mean, he's a stud, though. They're not laughing at Melvin Gordon, I would think.
No. No.
All right. Well, that was a pretty big game here in Green Bay last weekend. Packers 26, Patriots 21. Man, what a complete mistake-free kind of a game. I mean, no turnovers. You know, you had the one drop touchdown at the end, but both teams just played so incredibly well. I mean, very rarely do these type of quote-unquote Super Bowl previews really live up to the hype. But it did. I mean, and it wasn't a flag football game between Rodgers and Brady. I mean, the defenses played well. You know, even that last pass Rodgers had to complete was in such tight coverage. There's a lot to get into with this game. To you, did it live up to the hype?
Yes. Just for the reasons you said, it was 3 hours. It was short and sweet, you know. Fortunately, there weren't a lot of injuries, you know. That, let's face it, that can extend a game. There weren't a lot of replay, those interminable replay challenges and red flags flying all around.
Ed Hockey League did have a few soliloquies.
Yeah, a little bit, but that was fun, too.
Like those. You asked him before the season about his propensity to ramble.
Yeah. He was here in early August on the officials tour. It was just a memorable night. One of the best regular season games I've ever covered.
Was it really? I mean, you covered this team decades.
Brady, Rodgers, outstanding players on both sides. I mean, the Patriots, they missed one tackle. I gave him one broken tackle against Eddie Lacy.
Wow.
One.
And he still almost had 100 yards.
Yeah. I mean, they played him tough, and the Packers gained how many yards? 478?
Mm-hmm.
And the Patriots never had the ball. I mean, that's what killed them, those early stops by Sam Barrington and Tremont Williams.
So, I mean, it kind of goes without saying that this game, this win, even at home, kind of tells everybody that, yeah, the Packers are a Super Bowl contender. They are for real. Yeah, they've been blowing teams out at home, but this is the game that maybe makes them the favorite in the NFC.
Mm-hmm. They beat a tough team, and they did it the right way, the mm-hmm. tough way. They were at home. They held serve. 3-point favorite. They won by 5. It's all good. So now that life goes on and they got 4 games left, you know?
You know, what really stood out to me with this game is you always think back to the year before and what's different from that. I mean, obviously Aaron Rodgers wasn't on the field, but defensively, I mean, they would never put MD Jennings out on Rob Gronkowski, single coverage, game on the line, fade to the end zone. Last year, they wouldn't have been able to move Clay Matthews inside if he was healthy because they didn't have any pass rushers outside. You know, Peppers, Mike Neal, Neal and Daniels obviously had that big sack the very next play. They could just do things schematically, defensively, that they could never do last year. And Dom Capers talked about that, how they kind of admitted they got so vanilla late last year with, you know, undrafted rookies out there, guys who just were not ready to be on that stage. You know, the defense could have stood up and led Green Bay through that month of November last year when Rodgers went down. They weren't able to. Where this year, that unit, to do what they did against Tom Brady, force 4 punts, force that missed field goal at the end, they finished. They finished against arguably the best offense.
Points well taken, Tyler. Very well taken. Jerron Williams or Jerron McMillan out there against Gronk.
Can you imagine that?
Match. Yeah.
And it's Clinton Dix, he's very self-aware, too. He knew when he stepped into press coverage and he stepped into Gronkowski. Gronkowski had been running these option routes all game in that situation. He knew that Tom Brady would look at him. What is he? I want to say 15 years younger than Brady, maybe 16,
mm-hmm.
and take him deep and challenge the rookie. And so he knew he was going to have to go stride for stride with Gronkowski. And literally to the ground, it was a contested ball to the end when he poked it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the game right there. Do you think that, here's a question. I mean, you covered this league a long time. 10, 15 years ago, though, with the rules and everything, would that have been a touchdown? I mean, is that the kind of the Calvin Johnson rule on needing to really have total possession as you roll on the ground? Or did it seem pretty incomplete to
you? Don't you think the ball was out a little bit before
Yeah, I do, but yeah. I mean, there, that conversation was floating around. I didn't know if you'd noticed any change.
I just thought it was an incomplete pass. Yeah. Yeah, I did. Now, Tyler, there was a player missing from the Patriot lineup, you know, that you know very well from your days at as a Syracuse Orangeman, and that's Chandler Jones, the right defensive end for the Patriots. He sat out with a hip. He should be back within a week or two or three. He's missed about four now. You know, they didn't have a pass rush, and Belichick just played a contained three- and four-man rush. I mean, with Jones, can you get after people? Would he make a difference in that, in a rematch, perhaps?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, let's look at his numbers here in a second, but he's been their best pass rusher. I mean, he's a guy who can stop the run, can get after the quarterback, and obviously the plan for New England was pretty clear that they just wanted to stick to the three- and four-man rush, cover on the back end, and try to get pressure that way. Jones has 22 sacks in 37 career games, five forced fumbles. I mean, he's a decent player.
I just don't know a lot about the player.
I just remember him being a personality back at Syracuse. I mean, he was your go-to guy. The family, I mean, Arthur Jones, there at Syracuse, his brother, Johnny Bones Jones, maybe the best UFC fighter in the country in the octagon. Some good genes from Rochester, New York. But, yeah, I guess he probably would have made a difference. But, I mean, this is Green Bay offensive line. Even with three- and four-man rushes, you still have to block man-to-man, and they did. I mean, boy, Rodgers had all day on some of those throws. Look at that third down at the end.
The O-line's been very impressive lately. Yep. The guards are playing hurt, but playing well, and all five are in unison. It's a huge factor.
So you wrote a story, what was it, maybe 2 weeks ago on the offensive line. I mean, just how pivotal is it that T.J. Lang with the ligament damage in his ankle, Josh Sitton with his toe injury, have kind of gritted through these four games. I mean, this is since the bye week that they had those injuries right before the bye, that they've played through these injuries to keep that line intact, because unlike another position where maybe there's somebody ready to step in and you don't really notice a big difference, boy, you notice a difference if there's a backup in on that offensive line on this team, especially with Don Barkley gone. I mean, is that maybe kind of the underrated storyline right now for this team?
It is. I mean, it's a position they're thin at, you know? I mean, you got Treader, Lane Taylor, and Garth Gerhardt. They just can't really afford an injury. And these guys are playing through it. They're playing well.
So you watch these guys on film more than anybody. How have they performed these last 4 weeks through their injuries?
Very good. Sitting, I don't know, a game, 2 games ago, was at Minnesota, I can't remember, but he gave a lot of penetration, but I thought he was much better in Minnesota. It was the game before Minnesota. God, I can't remember these games, Tyler. against the Eagles, he gave up a lot of penetration. Fletcher Cox, things like that. But then Sitton was outstanding in Minnesota and played real well against New England. So maybe that the toe is abating a little bit, the pain.
Yeah. Still, I mean, that Philadelphia game, I mean, they had the one sack, but they didn't hit Rodgers outside of that, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, look at that pass rush.
Very good front.
It does start there, and we're kind of starting to see what McCarthy talked about before the season and this maybe being his best offensive line.
Now we got that vaunted Falcon rush coming in this week, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay. Vaunted? Okay, a little teaser from Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, what else about this game? Darrell Revis, they weren't afraid of him, which they played afraid against Richard Sherman in week one, kind of avoided half the field. They dictated the action, as you wrote. How did they dictate the action? I mean, is it moving Randall Cobb around? I mean, they put him in the backfield, so they really couldn't mug him at the line. Escapes free on that wheel route for 33 yards, which, you watch that play, Devontae Adams, a little veteran nudge of Kyle Arrington on that play, too.
Really?
Yeah, a little friendly bump. I think Tom Clements called it, quote-unquote, he got tied up. But hey, Cobb gets free. All of a sudden, Rob Ninkovich is on him. Yeah. 33 yards.
Yeah.
How else did they dictate the action in this game?
They went empty. They spread him out a lot, you know. I mean, had they been stationary, I mean, Cobb was all over Revis, or vice versa, right?
Mm-hmm.
He covered him closely. Browner with the safety, that was a good thing against Nelson. McCarthy just changed the whole tenor of the game when he went with Cobb in that backfield. He caught four passes out of the backfield in that second quarter, one series. It gave Cobb confidence then to go back in the slot in the second half and make some plays. It forced Belichick and Matt Patricia to change their matchups. He realized Davante Adams had a big advantage over the third guy, whether it was Logan Ryan or Denard or Arrington later on, and he attacked. McCarthy attacked.
McCourty.
It was a tour de force for McCarthy. You know, I don't want anybody to assume that I meant he was out coaching Bill Belichick, because I don't mean that at all. My column was written under, you know, a pretty harsh deadline with a lot of things to do that night. The fact was, I was just trying to point out that McCarthy coached well. I mean, this is apart from what Belichick was doing. I mean, you're not going to go out and coach Bill Belichick. He's as prepared as anybody in history, and just as well as anybody in history. But McCarthy, for what he had at his disposal, I thought he did an awesome job.
You mentioned Davante Adams. Probably his best game up until that drop, 100-plus yards. Boy, his quick feet off the line, that's what really stands out to me, how he can just lose a defender, waste a defender with a stutter step. His deep ball, he ran a little out and up. You know, you just kind of assume sometimes that these players that come from pass-happy offenses, everything just comes easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're basically playing a video game there with Derek Carr at quarterback. But I remember talking to Derek Carr himself, talking to his coach out there, and they just raved about his footwork, raved about his playmaking ability. Carr called him Baby Megatron, Optimus Prime. And you're kind of seeing the skills that they saw then finally really apply now in this game. Because, I mean, this was a fish-in-the-barrel draft for wide receivers. I mean, maybe the best draft ever for wide receivers. Ted Thompson and his scouting department, they grade this position better than anybody in the NFL. At least history tells you that. So you just kind of almost assume that they nailed this pick. Davante Adams, this was a breakthrough game of sorts for him.
Mm-hmm. You wrote the column about him this week. Yeah, his feet, he has improved. He wasn't showing that kind of footwork in August in those one-on-ones. He has improved over these four months, a lot.
I'll just say one thing. I think it was it might have been an OTAs or minicamp. One of those, and it was, you know, they're not in pads or anything, but he ran some route. I don't remember what he really ran, but he just, like, turned a defensive back inside out. He just looped around, did something. I mean, it was an ankle-breaking Allen Iverson type of route, and it's just, it catches your eye. Well, this guy can run a route, and it's just a matter of kind of gaining a quarterback's trust, and it's not easy to do. I mean, Jordy Nelson, boy, he didn't really truly break out until the end of his third year. That Super Bowl run is when he really started ascending. Randall Cobb, his rookie year, I mean, he had a lot of guys ahead of him. But Adams is starting, and in their three receiver looks, Rodgers goes to him 11 times, has some big plays, probably a good omen for him in this offense right now. Okay, anything else you want to hit on with this game before we move along here?
Yeah, I think that's
move forward, as you like to say. Move forward.
Yeah.
Did you hear Mike McCarthy dropped a stack success on Monday?
No, I missed that.
He's in. You
the hardest thing to do. You need to stack success, but the hardest thing to do is to
hit your targets.
Handle success.
Yeah, I don't. Right? I get that. It's the stacking success that phrase. Maybe we can call this podcast "Scattering Success." I oppose my successes scattered about. Don't want to stack them. Miss a few targets.
Well,
okay, and so all right, they get this big win. They're 9-3. Everything looks great. Four games to go. Where are they in the NFC? How do they stack up? We're starting to really see the contenders, the pretenders separate themselves. You wrote the column that the Seattle Seahawks are still Green Bay's number one competition in the NFC. I completely agree with you. At some point, you're going to be in a street fight. You're going to have to play the Seahawks in their kind of a game, San Francisco at their kind of a game, and you're going to have to get out of that street fight alive. Is it the Seahawks then? Does anybody else in that NFC really scare you? Let me rephrase that. Who else in the NFC could go into Lambeau Field and win?
Into Lambeau. How about the Eagles?
I guess not.
I think they're a pretty good club. Could Dallas? Dallas can't really play defense. They're just, I mean, they just don't have the personnel. They lost Sean Lee in August or whenever it was, and they're just, Rod Marinelli should be coach of the year with what he's done getting the Cowboys to 8-4 with that D.
I'm just not as down on Dallas as everybody else. They look terrible on Thanksgiving Day, but they're just one of those teams that I feel like could turn it on and be a juggernaut if they want at some point. Their defense was playing really well early in the year. They beat Seattle. And I think it was in Seattle, right?
Yeah, I guess that was. Yeah. I don't buy the Cowboys.
You don't buy the Cowboys. All right. Let's see. Who do you buy? Is there anybody else?
What about the Detroit Lions? Do we want to discuss them at this point?
Well, first of all, I just pulled up the Dallas schedule.
Okay.
So they've won two of their last five games. Two of those were without Tony Romo.
Yeah.
They beat Seattle in Seattle 30-23. They beat the Saints. And they haven't really beaten another good team outside of that. So maybe you're onto something. I just look at Romo, Murray, the weapons that they have on offense. I feel like those kinds of weapons could flip a switch. They could turn it on, and they could go toe-to-toe with an offense like Green Bay and hold up just enough on defense with what they have for it to be a game.
They got a really good O-line, and, you know, when you go on the road, you travel, you got to have a good O-line to play in playoffs, and they have that. I'm not a big Romo fan, not as much to the extent you are. But he's won games. He can throw the ball. He can run and extend. But they're D. There's just not much there, Tyler.
Rolando McClain.
Off of wherever he was. And, I mean, Justin Durant, who had played well, the former Lion and Jaguar, he's out for the year. So their two best linebackers, they're down. They got no pass rush. They're playing Jeremy Mincy. Mincy's the former. He's starting at right end. He was in the Super Bowl as, like, Denver's seventh D lineman last year.
Take it easy on old Mincy. I have no idea who he is.
Wow. Hayden, the ex-Badger, he's starting, I think, for that team. It just doesn't add up. Marinelli's done a great, great job.
Well, obviously, Green Bay would move the ball on them, but I think Dallas could potentially move the ball on Green Bay. That's the only – I'm saying outside of Seattle, San Francisco – is Colin Kaepernick, can you rehabilitate him as a quarterback right now, or is he done?
No, he's not done. If the Niners can get in, could they crank it up and win at Green Bay? Yes, they can. They'd have tremendous confidence. They've done it a couple times, you know. They're still a physical outfit. I mean, who knows? Maybe Bowman would be back. Willis is out for the year, but Chris Borland's doing pretty good. They got a heck of a secondary, the Niners. Their front, Justin Smith's not what he was, but Alden Smith's back. They got some rush. They definitely have some rush. They got a kid by the name of Lynch who showed a lot of pressure against Seattle. He's got promise. You want to go to the Seahawks? They're at Philly this week. It's a cross-country trip. It's a huge game. Chip Kelly's had 10 days. They each will have had 10 days to prepare. I don't know who the favorite's on that one. It's going to be, I assume, low scoring. Can Sanchez do much against that D? How do you see it, Tyler?
He's going to be at home.
Yep.
And it seems like he's starting to really find his rhythm with that read option. McCoy's back. They're finally a little healthy on the offensive line. I think that the Eagles, we're probably all a little skewed around here with how bad that they looked at Lambeau Field.
Mm-hmm.
They're still a contender. Yeah, I don't know. Whether they're on the road or at home, Seattle right now, you know, watching that game Thursday night, with Richard Sherman, I mean, he's back to trash-talking. He's taunting the fans. You know, you got Russell Wilson. You know, nobody can touch him. He's running around, escaping, making plays. Marshawn Lynch is back to hating the media. Hey, just seem like the Seattle Seahawks of old, you know? They just kind of seem like that swagger that people love or absolute hate is kind of back, and it's back at the right time right now for them.
They lost their nose tackle, the hub of their defense, Brandon Kneebane, I think November 9, out for the year with Achilles or something.
So you're telling me that people don't have to pray for Corey Linsley, right? That's what Bruce Irvin said before that game.
Oh, that's right. You
know, pray for Corey Linsley against Kneebane.
The Niners tried to run right up the middle where they should have, where Jordan Hill and the old Viking Kevin Williams were. I spent about 5 hours with that tape, and they tried. And, you know, they got a backup center, which is a problem. They're playing Marcus Martin at center, the rookie. and he wasn't very good. But you got Alex Boone and Mike Iupati, and they ran power, and they were, and it was like a yard or two. That defense was closing down, and there was just nothing. And then when Kaepernick tried to go to the perimeter or throw the ball, they were just over him like, you know, I mean, like stink on you know what. And wasn't it something else, the pursuit?
Yeah.
No.
Boy, I guess for San Francisco, they're going to have to get that running game going, because when Kaepernick's at its best, it's off of that running game when he can run a little read option, when he can play action, throw it deep. He's got one of the strongest arms in the game.
He's got good receiving core.
He's got great good receivers, but he's not going to sit in the pocket and make a read and make a throw. You know, there was a play. Did you see the play where I think there his fullback kind of wheeled up the sideline? He forced it to him when he just had, you know, he had an open receiver underneath. It was a pretty simple read that he wasn't able to make. So, you know, Seattle kind of turned it into that kind of game. They're going to have to get a running game going. Carlos Hyde, Frank Gore. But I'm with you. I think it's Seattle. I think Seattle. You know, you mentioned Detroit. You know, it could come down to week 17 between Green Bay being getting a first-round bye or being that sixth playoff team in a wild card game.
T, before we get to the Lions, let me mention one thing, okay, that should also be mentioned on that Seattle Niner game. Anthony Davis, the right tackle, the starter for about 4 years, he did not play, and he was replaced by Jonathan Martin. And Cliff Avril abused Jonathan Martin. I mean, he was just bull-rushing him back off his feet. I mean, if we saw a Packer tackle getting abused like that, you know, we'd just be all over him in the stuff we write. And it was horrible. Now, I assume Davis will be back. You know, I don't think it's a very long injury. And that made Seattle's pass rush look a lot better, this total dominance of an overmatched right tackle. So that's another thing that made Seattle probably look better than they were. So, all right, now, I'm sorry.
Well, you're saying San Francisco should sign Richie Incognito?
I wouldn't go that far.
Pair him with Martin? Right side, strong side?
All right, let's go back to the Lions.
What a story that'd be, huh? Come on now, I'm trying to bait you into saying something you regret.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's go to the Lions, Tyler. So they are sitting at 8-4. The Packers are at 9-3.
Mm-hmm.
Now you continue. Is that before you were rudely interrupted?
All right. So Detroit, they've been pretty lucky this year in a lot of games, right?
Yeah.
The Atlanta game, New Orleans, no luck involved in their win against Green Bay. But they're... You create your own luck to an extent, but they've gotten to this point based on a little luck. But here they are. They're one game back. They have Calvin Johnson back. Matt Stafford's back to slicing them in the double coverage to Calvin Johnson. Reggie Bush is healthy now, right?
Is he?
Or not healthy yet. He's getting healthier.
Who knows?
Who knows where he's got? They got.
My son Charlie thinks Reggie Bush, you should just forget about him. He's a non-factor. You think Joik Bell and Riddick.
Theo Riddick.
Riddick's not bad.
He's good back. But I don't know, I mean, can they really go into Lambeau Field and win for the first time since 1991? Was Don Majkowski the quarterback then? I mean, was that the last time that they won at Lambeau Field?
Wow. No, I think they won back-to-back in cold weather, 90 and 91. The late Blair Keel started one of those games.
Okay.
Yes, he did. One of them was like 3 degrees. He defeated Rodney Pete, and the other starting quarterback, I'll bet, was Majkowski, but I'm not sure on that.
Can they do it, though?
Well, Seattle went to Detroit. No, New England. Detroit at New England. And I studied that tape to get ready for the Patriot game. The Lion offensive line that day, it was as brutal as anything you've ever seen. Mm. Larry Warford, the really good right guard, was out. They played Swanson, the rookie from Arkansas. Total decimation. Riley Reiff got hurt on the first play. I don't know how much time. No, he eventually played on Thanksgiving, but he got hurt in the first play, and they put Lucas over at left tackle. Total abuse. The right tackle was a Waddle. Horrible.
Wow.
Their offensive line, Stafford, had no chance. That New England rush that day against those backup people, it was overwhelming. You put them against good people in Green Bay, they were totally stifled. It was a shot. The opposition there was startling.
How were they able to, spread them out like they did and have so much success? New England, They spread Detroit out, had success throwing the ball. But then also LeGarrette Blount, they pick him off the street. He averages 7-8 a carry.
That was at the end, though. Mm-hmm. They threw the ball against Detroit.
Right.
All that running yards by Blount came in the fourth quarter when the Lions had kind of quit. So it was just a passing thing, and they just spread him out. They blocked the offensive line, you know. They did okay against Ansa and Sue. I mean, there were knockdowns against Brady. There's always going to be knockdowns against Brady. It's just a fact of life in New England. Their lines have never been great, and Brady's going to stand in there and take hits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's never hurt, is he? Other than the one shot 4 years ago by the Chiefs.
Boy, there can't be another quarterback in the NFL where it looks like he's going to get sacked, and he waits till the absolute last split second to throw.
He does.
There were so many plays at Lambeau this past weekend where it just looked like he was going to get clobbered, and he did. He got hit, but the ball came out at the last second.
It's easier to play quarterback now. That's the way Dan Fouts used to play. And back then, Fouts was just on his back constantly. He was always hurt because pass rushers could drill you when you were a step and a half away. Now they have to pull up and hug. Totally different game. Take all these passer ratings and stats and all this passing yardage with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Different game.
Okay.
Different game. It's huggy game now. I mean, you sit back there, and you got a rusher coming at you two steps away. You don't really have to panic. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to get into the fetal position. You don't have to protect yourself. You know you're not going to get drilled.
Hmm.
You're just not. You can stand in there tall and complete these balls, and then they hug you. Nobody wants that suspension, that fine, and that penalty.
You could also say that defenses are a lot better at disguising coverages, that the cover corners are a lot better than they were in the 80s, that it's a much more complicated game schematically.
You could also say that all the mayhem downfield is not being committed against those receivers. They have carte blanche to run anywhere they want without being touched.
You could also say that we should move on to a new topic here.
Okay.
all right. We got to talk about the most divisive player on the Packers roster, or one of the most divisive that seems to split the fan base. A.J. Hawk played 27 snaps around there. Sam Berrington played 45, 46 snaps. So A.J. Hawk was in the base defense. Sam Berrington played in the nickel, which they used a ton, and Clay Matthews was the dime linebacker. Now the big question here is, was this a one-game thing? Is this kind of like what they did against Philadelphia, season opener 2010, when A.J. Hawk, the last time he had one tackle in the game was then, 4 years ago. Is it like that situation where they kind of go back to the norm and play him a ton? Berrington played really well. I mean, his hits packed a punch. He made a difference. Where do we go from here? Dom Capers said it's always a week-to-week thing, but he says that about a lot of things. And he also told me Friday that Brad Jones would be covering Rob Gronkowski at times as the dime linebacker. Brad Jones didn't play on defense.
One snap, I think.
The Baker's one snap.
You know, I think it might have been the kneel down.
Okay.
Or first half kneel down. I think that's what it was.
Okay. All right, so A.J. Hawk.
You talk to A.J.
Well, first, let me get your take. Is this the end for A.J. Hawk? Is he going to fade off into the sunset now as a part-time play, a third of the snaps player to maybe not even playing?
No. No, there's a lot of time left, and he'll be on that field. They like him. Ted Thompson likes him. The coaches like his brain. No, there will be a time. Lattimore's out. We don't know how long. We're taping this Wednesday morning, but I mean, there's a minus there. They want Matthews. They might want Matthews more to play outside backer, so that means AJ would play. There's all kinds of situations in which you could see him playing 75% of the time.
Agreed. Yeah. So talking to him, I guess it would have been a week and a half ago or so. You know, he's often not really hanging around the locker room during the week. He'll talk after games, but not one of those players that we really hear from during the week. So just wanted to get his take on where he thinks he's at with his game this year, his career, if he's proud of this season, his career. And I thought that, you know, one quote was kind of telling and a little telling now after the fact, where he said, quote, "That's how I operate. I don't take I don't ever take anything for granted because I know anything's possible. You could be here today, gone tomorrow. I respect that about the league. I feel like I do now. I feel like I could play for a while. So I guess the impetus for this story was 9 years into it. 9 years, and he's still in the middle of this defense. He's still here. And I know that fans hate the sight of seeing him maybe tackling the back 6 yards downfield, not getting that big interception or big sack, but there's obviously something that coaches see, something the Packers see and know that we don't know on the outside. Because if you're in the NFL and you're not getting the job done, you're gone. I mean, you're out of this league. And he's played in 147 of a possible 149 games. You can tack on two more to those. This was 2 games ago. There's a reason he's in there. I don't think that this is the end for him. That I agree with you. I think that to some degree, he's going to be involved with this defense. Now, if he's not in there and things are running smoothly, there's not really a hitch in the defense. Guys are lined up where they're supposed to be, making plays, and whoever's an inside linebacker can make those calls. Maybe he doesn't play as much, but that seems to be his value still, is that confidence, that durability, reliability, all of that thing, the intangible. I mean, they've stuck with the intangible.
He plays with tremendous intensity. He really gives effort, man. I can just think back on even in the last 2 or 3 years, writing in those ratings the day after, like in a defeat or something. It would have been worse had not had A.J. Hawk's heart and hustle. I mean, the guy gives extreme effort. He is, and he's selling out all the time. He's small now, you know, he's around 230, and he's taking beastly body blows. I mean, he's diving in front of people. He's willing. He's so durable. He throws himself into pulling guards, taking down interference. There's pluses to all that stuff. This guy, he is a real warrior. There's no question.
He is. I mean, and you mentioned the size. So he's in the 230s, where in the past he played in the 250s. He credits, you know, he has his own stepper at home at Lambeau. He's always on that thing. He drinks black coffee all the time, which kind of contradicts the Aaron Rodgers longevity approach, right? So they kind of disagree there. So that does help with athleticism and being able to play this long. I mean, if he was still in the 250s, he probably would have, you know, been really considered a dinosaur and been long gone a few years ago. But he made that conscious decision to lose some weight. Is there downside to playing at this weight when you watch the film? Is there any of that to his game?
He just plays small, you know, Tyler. He's starting to play old and he's starting to play small. It's inevitable. And you've seen it, you know, when he was playing next to Brad Jones or playing next to Lattimore, it wasn't as there wasn't that stark difference between the two inside backers. But we saw it with Matthews when he went back, and now we saw it with Barrington. Explosive young players who can strike a blow, you know, shock somebody, who can it's not just delivering a blow. And this is what we don't know about Barrington. About a week ago, a scout told me that when he evaluates linebackers, you have to be able to make a hard hit. Okay, run your feet on contact, explode through the ball carrier. But if you can't get off a block, that doesn't really make any difference, because then you're making all these tackles 6, 7, 8 yards downfield. So you got to shed and you got to be able to strike. We don't know if Barrington can do that. I mean, he was uncovered on a lot of these plays. You know, he was, drafted in the 7th round, so scouts didn't think he could. He's got a lot to prove, let's face it.
Yeah.
But we know Matthews can do both.
Asked Hawk what his value is to the defense. Quote, whatever I bring to the team, whatever they ask me to do, I feel very comfortable doing it. And then this was an interesting response. Is he proud of his season? Is he proud of his career, where he's at? Quote, I'm definitely proud that I'm with the Packers still. I'm very happy and thankful to still be with the Packers and playing football. I'm 30 now and still there. Obviously, there's been multiple times throughout my career where you never know. Think back to the pay cut, the extension before that. They could have moved on then when they stuck with Hawk.
Yeah.
You just wonder how long they'll keep sticking with him and to what degree. He's got 1 year left on his deal after this. That's been the position, as you wrote earlier this year, that was the biggest weakness on this team. They move Clay Matthews inside. They're mixing in Barrington, mixing in Hawk, finding different combinations. We're going to find out very soon if this is a week-to-week thing, what direction they're going to take there.
Yep, that sums it up.
And this week will be a good test for whoever's that inside linebacker. Steven Jackson looked like the Steven Jackson of about 5, 6 years ago last week. and the Falcons can stretch you vertically at times. First place in the NFC South, Bob. First place
five and seven.
Can Green Bay lose this game? Could they possibly lose this game?
One of the four opinions I got yesterday from scouts and coaches, one gentleman picked the Falcons. 20-17, his upset special. He was dead serious. He thinks it's a trap game for Green Bay. The other three all predicted a blowout by more than 20 points. 48-17 said one. He expected to be a joke, and that the Falcons being in position to win a division are a joke.
Why did he see this as a trap game?
He just said an offensive letdown after the New England emphasis. You know.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, the Falcons are not very good outside. Under Mike Smith, they're playing 482 ball. Under Mike Smith at home, they're playing 722 ball. Big difference. They're like the Saints, you know, traditionally have been. All right, the Falcons. You got Matt Ryan. He's a good quarterback. He's, what, 11th or 12th in passer rating? That's about where he is in the NFL, you'd say. Mm-hmm. Top 15, certainly. He's not bad. He's a leader. He's an okay athlete. He's an accurate thrower. He doesn't have a great arm, but he's got a good arm. He can hurt you. Packers have seen that many times. Julio Jones is coming off a game where he dominated Patrick Peterson. 10 for 189, he killed him. Peterson's one of the top three or four corners. Julio Jones is the truth. Roddy White should be back from an ankle injury. Roddy can't run like he did, but he's got great hands and he's darn good. I like the number three. I made a bad mistake last night in the scouting report. I called him Henry Douglas.
Mm.
Henry Douglas was an abolitionist or something like that, a senator? I don't know. It's Harry Douglas, so I apologize to all the Falcon fans who have given me grief on emails this morning. Harry Douglas is a good slot. He's been there for 7 years. I like the guy. He's fluid and quick. The tight end, they lose Gonzalez. They got Levine Toiolo, 6'8 guy, kind of a plotter, not a real factor. Running back, Steven Jackson, looks kind of over the hill, Ty. He had a 55-yard run. If you want to see a pathetic tackle, go back and look at Cromartie for Arizona on that play. Wow, what a turndown.
So there's nothing left in the tank.
It really isn't, no.
So it wasn't more of an aberration last week for him?
He's a magnificent football player in St. Louis, but it's just not the same guy. It's his final year and just can't do it anymore, you know. They got these little guys, Devontae Freeman and Jaquez Rogers. Freeman's better, the rookie from Florida State. He's a good back. He's a tough guy. They should play him more. Okay, the offensive line. They've lost four guys of their top seven to season-ending injuries.
Mm.
They were horrible at midseason. That's when they lost how many in a row? Seven in a row? Six in a row? Five in a row, I guess it was. But now the last five games, they've somewhat stabilized with the same five starters. Jake Matthews, the top pick, had to move from right to left. He's playing on a high ankle sprain. It's not been very good. He's trying to battle through it. You know, I mean, the family battles through everything. He's a finesse guy. He's got to get stronger. He'd be a tremendous center or guard. I just don't know if he's going to ever be a really good left tackle. Justin Blaylock, he's a good left guard. John Asamoah, the former Chief, he's an okay right guard. The center, James Stone, one of seven rookie starters at the position.
Wow, that's right.
Yeah, Stone is a guy from Tennessee. Nice arm length, pretty good size. Doesn't play strong, nothing like Lindsley. Probably like Brian Stork for the Patriots, another rookie. Ryan Schrader, the right tackle, comes out of Valdosta State. He was terrible against Nick Perry in the game here last December.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad. Schrader's kind of like Tyson Klebo, used to play the position for the Falcons. Tough guy. Tries to get by on nastiness. You know, strength and feet are suspect. That's the offense.
All right, so I guess when you really break it down like that, the one area that might give you pause if you're the Packers is you have Sam Shields going through his concussion protocol right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're taping this Wednesday. We'll find out more Thursday on that. You know, they have stud receivers, and Julio Jones, what he did last week, I mean, he's one of the best in the game. I just want to bring up this email that's kind of in that same vein. Loyal listener Dave Bundy, our buddy Dave, he wanted to ask about the secondary. He noticed that you gave Tremont Williams high marks against New England when, to him, that it seemed like Williams got beat badly for a touchdown. Where's Williams at in his game? Shields is iffy. Devon House got some action. The cornerbacks, which is, for, we would talk about that as one of the deepest positions on the team. I mean, this would be a big test for them. What did you think about Tremont Williams' game?
I liked it. I mean, that was a tough route that LaFell ran against him. That was man in the corner, two yards away. What are you going to do, you know? There was no rush on the play. Right. He's throwing. It was a heck of a route by LaFell. You got to give him credit. God, he showed those Devontae Adams feet. And Brady threw a strike with no rush. You know, what are you going to do? I thought Tremont tackled well, and I thought he covered well in the game. They really tested him, and I thought he was real good.
A different priority, though, for Green Bay. I mean, Rob Gronkowski, 6'5", 265. They tried throwing different players at him all game. He's going to run different routes, be a different type of threat than Julio Jones, a guy who can burn you deep. So maybe the best wide receiver this side of Calvin Johnson that Green Bay's cornerbacks will face this year.
D, they're last in the league in yards allowed. They take the ball away, though. They're up there in takeaways. I don't know where they are. They're like third or fifth or something like that in takeaways. Forget that. That was yesterday, Tyler. Yesterday's assignment was Atlanta for 12 hours. Okay, their best pass rusher, Croy Bierman. He's got 2.5 sacks. Their pass rush the last 6 years, if they wouldn't have had John Abraham for 5 of those 6 years, like they wouldn't have had a rush. That's killed Mike Smith, and if he gets fired, it's going to be because he never developed a pass rush. Tom Dimitroff and him just have not done it. Bierman's just a try-hard guy, you know. He can't really win. Jonathan Babineau is a good interior player. This is his 10th year. He's still quick. He's still pretty strong. He can still win a one-on-one pass rush. He's a good player. Otherwise, you know, they bulked up to stop the run. They thought they were too soft, and so they paid big money to Miami for nose tackle Paul Soliai and to the Chiefs for five technique Tyson Jackson. They've done their job. I don't think they're worth that kind of money, but, hey, when your defense, run defense was as bad as the Falcons, they've added some brawn.
Hageman.
Yeah, Hageman has not done it. He looks like he's, you know, he's a boomer bust, and right now it's trending towards bust, but it's way early. But he's not playing much. He just doesn't, you know, give it hard all the time. Corey Peters is an okay vet. All right, so that's they're big and brawny. But then they got these four hybrids that defensive coordinator Mike Nolan interchanges. He stands them up. He puts them down. He's desperate for a rush. So he's got O.C. Umanyora, who's kind of replaced John Abraham for a year and a half. He's over the hill. He's an ex-giant. He's crafty, but he doesn't have the juice in his legs. You got, okay, Bierman's a hybrid. You got Masakoi and Malachi Goodman. Goodman is a freak with arms and hands. Like, you just can't believe the size, but just lacks instincts. They got a whole bunch of guys, and they're going to be rotating all these people in 3-4, 4-3, 3-2, 3-2, 3-4-3. It's going to be hard to follow. It's a hard defense to prepare for. But when you break it down individually, those 11 guys, they just really don't have it.
Yeah, because sometimes when you have a lot of guys and you don't really have one.
Good point. Okay, linebackers. They got two guys. They got Paul Warrelow, a second-year guy from Denver. He's kind of like James Laurinaitis of St. Louis. Plays every snap, makes a lot of tackles. Pretty good. A leader. A decent player, you know. You got Joplu Bartu from Texas State, another second-year guy. He's got some athleticism. You got Prince Shembo, who got in all that. He was regarded as a character risk at Notre Dame after that domestic situation there. Some teams wouldn't touch him. He goes to Atlanta in the fourth round. They converted him to inside after a really good player, Sean Weatherspoon, gets hurt in the offseason for the year. Shembo's been okay. That's their front seven.
Boy, nobody really scares you there.
No.
Nobody.
The secondary's better. You got a really good cornerback in Desmond Trufant. It's been a really good pick, and the guy's a good player. He's had matched against people, so he probably will match against Jordy Nelson. You got Robert Alford going to play with a broken wrist, it looks like. He's missed two games with his broken wrist. He can really run. He's a little on the frail side, but he's like 4-3-5. Nickelbacks, at least they're veterans. Josh Wilson, the ex-Redskin, and Robert McClain, they're okay. You know, I mean, I just can't see them keeping up with Randall Cobb. Safeties, William Moore came back after a 7-game absence. He's a strong safety. He's a big intimidator. Throws his weight around. He'll drill anything in the box. He's reckless. But if you can match him deep, it's over. He's just not going to match up deep, and it's going to be a touchdown. The other safety's a kind of a mess. You got Dwight Lowry, a former Jaguar. Hmm. Just a guy. Ishmael plays in the dime at safety when they move Lowry up. He's okay. Former Badger Desmond Southward played a lot early. He's probably not going to play now. Special teams, you got a tremendous kicker in Matt Bryant, at least in a dome. Don't know how he'll fare on the cold weather, but he's sure accurate. Matt Bosher, the punter, kicks off well, also punts. He's fine. Devin Hester made one of those great cuts, moving to his right and then up the field and heading straight north. 70-yard touchdown call back when he got a goofy face mask penalty at the end. He still got it. Keith Armstrong's teams, they cover well. They're good special teams. That's the Falcons. 11.5-point dog. How do you see it?
Well, I mean, defensively, right, maybe they have that shutdown corner. Mm-hmm. Nobody in the front seven really scares you. The pass rush is awful. On paper, Green Bay should be able to find a way to move the ball, score points at will like they have been doing at Lambeau Field. So really, for Atlanta to have a shot in this one, they're going to have to put up a lot of points. Julio Jones is going to probably have to play out of his mind, and Devin Hester might have to make a play at some point.
They're tied for the division lead. They got tremendous incentive, don't they?
They do. Everything is still in front of this team.
I mean, if they were 5-7 with that record and three games out like you expected them to be, I wouldn't give them a Chinaman's chance or anybody's chance or a Canadian's chance, wherever we want to go. Around the globe.
I've never heard of that one before.
But now, Mike Smith's got him believing.
Yeah.
They dominated the Cardinals, the top seed in the NFC.
Well, when you watch that game, I mean, Arizona's defense, I mean, it's not like they lost a great player to injury like they did on offense with Carson Palmer, correct? I mean, that's pretty telling, isn't it, that they did have so much success running and throwing against the league's top defenses?
I don't know what happened to Arizona. They took the day off, you know?
Yeah.
They were horrible, and Drew Stanton was worse than horrible. Saw that game at length, and so I don't know.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take a few questions here before we sign off. Okay, Slappy White, our good pal Slappy, he asks, why is Casey Hayward behind Micah Hyde, even though, in his words, Hyde isn't anywhere near as good? Why does this keep happening? They're two very different players, two very different slot corners, where Hayward is so instinctive. He might give you that big play here and there. Hyde, a very good tackler. That is interesting how they're using both of these guys. They've kind of split that role. What do you see?
I think the tackling element is what it was, Tyler. I mean, they were worried about New England running against their nickel and Minnesota running against their nickel.
Chicago, you saw a lot of Hayward. He had that.
Was it? Yeah.
I think so. He had the touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Witt, the cornerback's coach, just asked him kind of point blank, is Hyde the best tackler you have back there? And I think he was thinking both safeties and corners. And he said, yeah, the most consistent fundamentally. Hmm. Yeah, he is.
I think that's it.
Okay. Brian Harstad, he asks, which of the three starting rookies has made the biggest impact? Corey Linsley, Davante Adams, or Ha-Ha Clinton Dix? Good question.
Hmm.
I'm going to go with, it's a close one. Just looking at the plan B and what else it could be at that position if this rookie wasn't on the field, I'm still going to say Clinton Dix, just because that position, especially next to Morgan Burnett, has been so bad, and it affects Burnett. It affects the defense as a whole. Everything is really connected on the back end there, and Clinton Dix, like we were talking about earlier, the fact that he didn't even cover Gronkowski in that situation, he adds a physical element. You have to be physical on a guy like Gronkowski back there, anybody you face. I think it's Clinton Dix. What do you think?
I don't have a strong opinion, too, so let's just go on. Tyler, Mayday wants to know, any idea why we've seen so little of DeJuan Harris in the backfield? I think his running style would be a good compliment to Mr. Eddie Lacy.
James Starks, they sent him up the sideline. He has a big catch in the 2-minute drill. I mean, who saw that coming out of James Starks and his hands? I think they still remember what James Starks has done this time of year. I mean, that Super Bowl run in 2010, last year he really came on at this point. I think they just kind of want to stick with him and his more slashing, aggressive, violent, upright kind of style. That's a compliment to Lacy itself.
Dwan Harris had a play, I can't remember now, it's probably been 6 weeks ago, when he, you know, danced and ran outside and lost 3 or 4. Coaches remember those plays.
Interesting. Okay, Bob. Let's see. Jeff Custer, he asks, would you characterize Sunday's victory over the Patriots as decisive or something closer? Well, I mean, they could have blown him out if they punched it in the red zone. We didn't really talk about the red zone. Score a couple of those touchdowns. Maybe they start running away from him.
Yeah, true. They were at home, you know. Yeah, I'd call it certainly not decisive. I'd call it impressive.
There you go.
Yep.
And you, Mr. McGinn, have a Super Bowl book that is on the shelf near you.
Let's push the book, huh?
Let's push the book.
Yeah.
We got to sell something on this show, right?
That would help.
It would help.
It's the ultimate Super Bowl book. Games, what, 1-46 now? Yeah, there's 2 games missing.
Okay.
But we still have boxes of the book down in the McGinn household basement.
We're at the compound here. They're in this basement right here?
They are, right down those
right
steps.
Right down there.
Down to the cave.
So you're saying if a fan wants a book, they can personally come here and hang out with you, have a beer? All right, we won't go that far, but I tell you what, it is a fascinating read. Can't say enough about it. You always learn something new out of that book. I mean, the people that you talk to, I still think about Mike Holmgren and some of his comments. That Seattle game, ripping the officials, you know, little things like that that you forget about in some of these games. It's remarkable. Everybody should buy one. I bought 3 or 4 myself a couple Christmases ago. It makes a fine gift, indeed.
So if anybody wants it, I'll personalize it, sign it, do whatever you want with it. Just send me an email, bmcginn@jrn.com, and lovely wife Pat will handle all the details, and we'll get it out in no time flat for your Christmas gift giving. Hey, that's a cool
There. Give us a little tease. Just give us a little something out of one of those Super Bowls at the top of your head.
I love that story when the your Buffalo Bills were getting ready to play the Cowboys, and they were practicing the shovel pass that they ended up using extensively in that game, and the Cowboys smelled it out.
Right.
Why were the Cowboys so prepared? Because on Monday or Tuesday of Super Bowl week, some Atlanta TV station, I think it was Atlanta station, was out at practice doing some B-roll. Isn't that what they call it? B-roll before practice. And in the background, they're interviewing Marv Levy or something like that. And in the background, you got Jim Kelly practicing shovel passes to Thurman Thomas. And Butch Davis was in the Cowboy meeting room back at the hotel, and they had on the local Atlanta news. And over his shoulder, Butch Davis looks over Jimmy Johnson's head. They're practicing the shovel pass behind that interview. And they went back and they studied, and when did they last do it? And they found it, and they were prepared, and Leon Lett had a fumble, and it was a complete mess.
I was going to say, there was a turnover, right, early in the second half of that
game.
Right, it totally changed the game.
That's one little anecdote.
Completely changed the game.
And you can read Bill Belichick from 3 hours of interviews about all his Super Bowls.
Wow, great stuff.
Very gracious with his time.
All right, we'll get your book. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we totally ignored the fact that we had a hiatus last week. We didn't do one on Thanksgiving.
Wasn't it sweet? Thanksgiving break, huh, T? Just like the college days.
I don't know. I'm putting that one on you.
Let's go to Johnny.
Okay, all right. Okay, thanks, guys.
Hear the music and dance. K-13 is her favorite song.